Chapter 39. Flight from the White Tower. Egwene and Elaine inclined their heads briefly to each group of women they passed as they made their way through the tower. It was a good thing there were so many women from outside in the tower today, Egwene thought. Too many for each to have an Aes Sedai or an accepted for escort. Alone or in small groups, garbed richly or poorly, in dress from half a dozen different lands, some still dusty from their journey to Tar Valon, they kept to themselves and waited their turn to ask their questions of the Aes Sedai or present their petitions. Some women, ladies or merchants or merchants' wives, had female servants with them. Even a few men had come with petitions, standing by themselves, looking unsure about being in the White Tower and eyeing everyone else uneasily. In the lead, Nynaeve kept her eyes purposefully ahead, her cloak swirling behind her, walking as if she knew where they were going, which she did, as long as no one stopped them, and had a perfect right to go there, which was a different matter altogether, of course. Dressed now in the clothes they had brought to Tar Valon, they certainly did not look like residents of the tower. Each had chosen her best dress that had a skirt divided for riding, and cloaks of fine wool, rich with embroidery. As long as they kept away from all who might recognize them, they had already dodged several who knew their faces. Egwene thought they might make it. "This would do better for a turn in some lord's park than a ride to Toman Head," Nynaeve had said dryly as Egwene helped her with the buttons of a grey silk with thread of gold work and pearled flowers across the bosom and down the sleeves. "But it may allow us to leave unnoticed." Now Egwene shifted her cloak and smoothed her own gold-embroidered green silk dress and glanced at Elaine, in blue slashed with cream, hoping Nynaeve had been right. So far everyone had taken them for petitioners, nobles, or at least women of wealth, but it seemed that they should stand out. She was surprised to realize why. She felt uncomfortable in the fine dress after wearing a novice's plain white for the past few months. A little cluster of village women in stout, dark woolens dropped curtsies as they passed. Egwene glanced back at Min as soon as they were beyond. Min had kept her breeches and baggy man's shirt under a boy's brown cloak and coat, with an old, wide-brimmed hat pulled down over her short hair. "One of us has to be the servant," she had said, laughing. "Women dressed the way you are always have at least one. You'll wish you had my breeches if we have to run." She was burdened with four sets of saddlebags bulging with warm clothes, for it would surely be winter before they returned. There were also packets of food pilfered from the kitchens, enough to last until they could buy more. "Are you sure I can't carry some of those, Min?" Egwene asked softly. "They're just awkward," Min said with a grin. "Not heavy." She seemed to think it was all a game, or else was pretending to think so. And people would be sure to wonder why a fine lady such as yourself was carrying her own saddlebags. "You can carry yours, and mine too if you want, once we—" Her grin vanished, and she whispered fiercely, "Aes Sedai!" Egwene whipped her eyes forward. An Aes Sedai with long, smooth black hair and aged ivory skin was coming toward them down the corridor, listening to a woman wearing rough farm clothes and a patched cloak. The Aes Sedai had not seen them yet, but Egwene recognized her. Takima, of the Brown Aja, who taught the history of the White Tower and Aes Sedai, and who could recognize one of her pupils at 100 paces. Nynaeve turned down a side hall without breaking stride, but there one of the accepted, a lanky woman with a permanent frown, hurried past them, hauling a red-faced novice by the ear. Egwene had to swallow before she could speak.
"That was Irella and Els. Did they notice us?"
She could not make herself look back to see.
"No," Min said after a moment. "All they saw was our clothes."
Egwene let out a long, relieved breath and heard one from Nynaeve, too.
"My heart may burst before we reach the stables," Elaine murmured. "Is this what an adventure is like all the time, Egwene? Your heart in your mouth and your stomach in your feet?" "I suppose it is," Egwene said slowly.
She found it hard to think that there had been a time when she had been eager to have an adventure, to do something dangerous and exciting like the people in stories.
Now she thought the exciting part was what you remembered when you looked back, and the stories left out a good deal of unpleasantness. She told Elaine as much. Still, the daughter heir said firmly, I have never had any real excitement before, and never likely to as long as Mother has any say in it, which she will until I take the throne myself. You two be quiet, Nynaeve said. They were alone in the hall for a change, with no one in sight in either direction. She pointed to a narrow flight of stairs going down. That should be what we want, if I haven't gotten turned around completely with all the twists and turns we've made. She took the stairs as if she were certain anyway, and the others followed. Surely enough, the small door at the bottom led out into the dusty yard of the south stable, where novices' horses were kept, for those who had them, until they had need of mounts again, which was generally not until they became accepted or were sent home. The gleaming bulk of the tower itself rose behind them. The tower grounds spread over a good many hides of land, with its own walls higher than some city walls. Nynaeve strode into the stable as if she owned it. It had a clean smell of hay and horse, and two long rows of stalls ran back into shadows barred with light from the vents above. For a wonder, Shaggy, Bella, and Nynaeve's gray mare stood in stalls near the doors. Bella put her nose over the stall door and whickered softly to Egwene. There was only one groom in evidence, a pleasant-looking fellow with gray in his beard, chewing a straw. We will have our horses saddled, Nynaeve told him in her most commanding tone. Those two. Men, find your horse and Elaine's. Men dropped the saddlebags and drew Elaine deeper into the stables. The stableman frowned after them and slowly took the straw from his mouth. There must be some mistake, my lady. Those animals are ours, Nynaeve said firmly, folding her arms so that the serpent ring was obvious. You will saddle them now. Egwene held her breath. It was a last-ditch plan that Nynaeve would try to pass as an Aes Sedai if they had difficulties with anyone who might actually accept her as one. No Aes Sedai or accepted would, of course, and probably not even a novice. But a stableman... The man blinked at Nynaeve's ring, then at her. I was told, too, he said at last, sounding unimpressed. One of the accepted and a novice. Wasn't nothing said about four of you. Egwene felt like laughing. Of course Leandrin would not have believed them able to get their horses by themselves. Nynaeve looked disappointed, and her voice sharpened. You trot those horses out and saddle them, or you'll have need of Leandrin's healing, if she will give it to you. The groom mouthed Leandrin's name, but one look at Nynaeve's face and he saw to the horses with no more than a mutter or two, not loud enough for any but himself to hear. Min and Elaine came back with their own mounts just as he finished tightening the second girth. Min's was a tall, dust-colored gelding, Elaine's a bay mare with an arched neck. When they were mounted, Nynaeve addressed herself to the stableman again. No doubt you were told to keep this quiet, and that hasn't changed whether we are 2 or 200. If you think it has, think about what Leandrin will do if you talk what you were told to keep quiet. As they were riding out, Elaine tossed him a coin and murmured, For your trouble, good man, you have done well. Outside, she caught Egwene's eye and smiled. Mother says a stick and honey always work better than a stick alone. I hope we don't need either with the guards, Egwene said. I hope Leandrin spoke to them, too. At Tarloman's gate, though, piercing the tall south wall of the tower grounds, there was no telling if anyone had spoken to the guards or not. They waved the four women through with no more than a glance and a cursory bow. Guards were meant to keep out those who were dangerous. Apparently these had no orders about keeping anyone in. A cool river breeze gave them an excuse to pull up the hoods of their cloaks as they rode slowly through the streets of the city. The ring of their horses' hooves on the paving stones was lost in the murmur of the crowds filling the streets and the music that came from some of the buildings they passed. People dressed in garments from every land, from the dark and somber mood of Cairhien to the bright, brilliant colors of the traveling people, and every style in between, split around the horsewomen like a river around a rock, but they still could not move at more than a slow walk. Egwene gave no attention to the fabulous towers with their sky-borne bridges or the buildings that looked more like breaking waves or wind-sculpted cliffs or fanciful shells than anything made from stone. Aes Sedai often went into the city, and in that crowd they could come face to face with one before they knew it. After a time, she realized the other women were keeping as close a watch as she, but she still felt more than a glimmer of relief when the Ogier Grove came into view. The great trees were now visible beyond the rooftops, their spreading tops 100 spans and more in the air. Towering oaks and elms, leather leaves and firs were dwarfed beneath them. A wall of sorts encompassed the grove, which was a good 2 miles across, but it was only an endless series of spiraling stone arches, each 5 spans high and twice as wide. By the outer side of the wall, carriages, carts, and people bustled along a street, while inside lay a wilderness of sorts. The grove had neither the tame look of a park nor the complete haphazardness of the forest depths. Rather, it seemed to be the ideal of nature, as if this were the perfect woods, the most beautiful forest that could be. Some of the leaves had already begun to turn, and even the small swaths of orange and yellow and red among the green seemed to Egwene to be exactly the way autumn foliage should look. A few people strolled just inside the open arches, and no one looked twice when the 4 women rode in under the trees. The city was quickly lost to view, even the sounds of it softened, then blocked by the grove. In the space of 10 strides, they seemed to be miles from the nearest town. "The north end of the grove," she said, Nynaeve muttered, peering around. "There isn't any point of it further north than—" She cut off as 2 horses burst from a copse of black elder, a dark glossy mare with a rider and a lightly laden packhorse. The dark mare reared, pawing the air as Leandrin reined her harshly. The Aes Sedai's face wore fury like a mask. "I told you not to tell anyone of this. Not anyone." Egwene noticed pole lanterns on the packhorse and thought it odd. "These are friends," Nynaeve began, her back stiffening, but Elaine broke in on her. "Forgive us, Leandrin Sedai. They did not tell us. We overheard. We did not mean to listen to anything we should not have, but we did overhear. And we want to help Randall Thor, too, and the other boys, of course," she added quickly. Leandrin peered at Elaine and Min. The late afternoon sunlight slanting through the branches shadowed their faces beneath the hoods of their cloaks. "So," she said finally, still watching those two, "I had made arrangements for you to be taken care of, but as you are here, you are here. 4 can make this journey as well as 2.
"Taken care of, Leandrin Sedai," Elaine said. "I do not understand."
"Child, you and that other are known as friends of these 2. Do you not think that there are those who would question you when they are found to be gone? Do you believe the Black Aja would be gentle with you just because you are heir to a throne? Had you remained in the White Tower, you might not have lived the night."
That silenced them all for a moment, but Leandrin wheeled her horse and called, "Follow me."
The Aes Sedai led them deeper into the grove until they came to a tall fence of stout ironwork, topped with a hedge of razor-sharp spikes. The Aes Sedai led them deeper into the grove until they came to a tall fence of stout ironwork, topped with a hedge of razor-sharp spikes. Curving slightly as if it enclosed a large area, the fence ran out of sight among the trees to left and right. There was a gate in the fence secured with a big lock. Leandrin unfastened this with a large key she produced from her cloak, motioned them through, then relocked it behind them and rode on ahead immediately. A squirrel chittered at them from a branch overhead, and from somewhere came the sharp drumming of a woodpecker.
"Where are we going?" Nynaeve demanded.
Leandrin did not answer, and Nynaeve looked angrily at the others.
"Why are we just riding deeper into these woods? We have to cross a bridge or else take ship if we're going to leave Tar Valon, and there isn't any bridge or ship in—"
"There is this," Leandrin announced. "The fence, it keeps away those who might harm themselves, but we have a need this day." What she gestured to was a tall, thick slab of what seemed to be stone, standing on edge, one side carved intricately in vines and leaves. Egwene's throat tightened. Suddenly she knew why Leandrin had brought lanterns, and she did not like what she knew. She heard Nynaeve whisper, "A waygate." They both remembered the ways all too well. "We did it once," she told herself as much as Nynaeve. "We can do it again. If Rand and the others need us, we have to help them. That's all there is to it." "Is that really..." Min began in a choked voice and could not finish. "A waygate," Elaine breathed. "I did not think the ways could be used any longer. At least I did not think their use was allowed."
Leandrin had already dismounted and plucked the trefoil of Endosaura leaf out of the carving. Like two huge doors woven of living vines, the gates were swinging open, revealing what appeared to be a dull, silvery mirror that gave their reflections back dimly.
"You do not have to come," Leandrin said. "You can wait here for me, safely enclosed by the fence until I come for you. Or perhaps the Black Aja will find you before anyone else."
Her smile was not pleasant. Behind her, the way gate came open to its fullest and stopped.
"I did not say I wouldn't come,"
Elaine said, but she gave the shadowed woods a lingering look.
"If we are going to do this," Min said hoarsely, "then let's do it."
She was staring at the way gate, and Egwene thought she heard her mutter, "The light burn you, Randalthor."
"I must go last," Leandrin said. "All of you in. I will follow."
She was eyeing the woods now, too, as if she thought someone might be following them.
"Quickly! Quickly!"
Egwene did not know what Leandrin expected to see, but if anyone at all came, they would probably stop them from using the waygate.
"Rand, you wool-headed idiot," she thought. "Why can't you just once get yourself into some kind of trouble that doesn't force me to act like the heroine in a story?"
She dug her heels into Bella's flanks, and the shaggy mare, restive from too much time in a stable, leaped forward.
"Slowly!"
Nynaeve shouted, but it was too late. Egwene and Bella surged toward their own dull reflections. Two shaggy horses touched noses, appeared to flow into each other. Then Egwene was merging into her own image with an icy shock. Time seemed to stretch out, as if the cold crept over her by the width of one hair at a time, and every hair took minutes. Suddenly, Bella was stumbling in pitch blackness, moving so fast the mare almost pitched over on her head. She caught herself and stood trembling as Egwene dismounted hurriedly, feeling the mare's legs in the dark to see if she had been hurt. She was almost glad of the dark to hide her crimson face. She knew that time as well as distance were different the other side of a waygate. She had moved before thinking. There was only the blackness around her in every direction, except for the rectangle of the open waygate, like a window of smoked glass when seen from this side. It let no light in, the black seemed to press right up against it, but through it Egwene could see the others, moving by the slowest increments like figures in a nightmare. Nynaeve was insisting on handing around the pole lanterns and lighting them. Leandrin was acceding with a bad grace, apparently insisting on speed. When Nynaeve came through the waygate, leading her gray mare slowly, ever so slowly, Egwene almost ran to hug her, and at least half of her feeling was for the lantern Nynaeve carried. The lantern made a smaller pool of light than it should have. The darkness pressed against the light, trying to force it back into the lantern, but Egwene had begun to feel that darkness pressing against her, as if it had weight. Instead, she contented herself with saying, "Bella's all right, and I did not break my neck the way I deserved to." Once there had been light along the ways before the taint on the power with which they had first been made, the taint of the Dark One on Sidon, had begun to corrupt them. Nynaeve thrust the pole of the lantern into her hands and turned to pull another from under her saddle girth. "As long as you know you deserve to," she murmured, "then you didn't deserve to." Suddenly she chuckled. "Sometimes I think it was sayings like that more than anything else that created the title of wisdom. Well, here's another. You break your neck and I'll see it mended just so I can break it again." It was said lightly, and Egwene found herself laughing too, until she recalled where she was. Nynaeve's amusement did not last long either. Min and Elaine came through the waygate hesitantly, leading their horses and carrying lanterns,
obviously expecting to find monsters waiting at the least. They looked relieved at first to find nothing but darkness, but the oppressiveness of it soon had them shifting nervously from foot to foot. Leandrin replaced the Avendasora leaf and rode through the closing waygate leading the packhorse. Leandrin did not wait for the gate to finish closing, but tossed the lead line of the packhorse to Min without a word and started along a white line, dimly made out by the light of her lantern, leading into the ways. The floor seemed to be stone, eaten and pitted by acid. Egwene scrambled hurriedly onto Bella's back, but she was no quicker to follow the Aes Sedai than anyone else. There seemed to be nothing in the world except the rough floor under the horse's hooves. Straight as an arrow, the white line led through the dark to a large stone slab covered with Ogier script inlaid in silver. The same pocking that marked the floor also broke the script in places. "A guiding," Elaine murmured, twisting in her saddle to look around uneasily. "Elida taught me a little about the ways. She would not say much. Not enough," she added glumly. "Or maybe too much." Calmly, Leandrin compared the guiding with a parchment, then stuffed it back into a pocket of her cloak before Egwene could get a look. Their lantern's light stopped abruptly rather than fading out at the edges, but it was enough for Egwene to see a thick stone balustrade eaten away in places as the Aes Sedai led them away from the guiding. An island, Elaine called it. The darkness made judging the island's size difficult, but Egwene thought it might be 100 paces across. Stone bridges and ramps pierced the balustrade, each with a stone post beside it marked with a single line in Ogier script. The bridges seemed to arch out into nothing. The ramps led up or down. It was impossible to see more than the beginning of any of them as they rode past. Pausing only to eye the stone posts, Leandrin took a ramp that led down, and quickly there was nothing but the ramp and the darkness. A dampening silence hung over everything. Egwene had the feeling that even the clatter of the horse's hooves on the rough stone did not travel very far beyond the light. Down and down the ramp ran, curving back on itself, until it reached another island, with its broken balustrade between bridges and ramps, its guiding that Leandrin compared with her parchment. The island seemed like solid stone, just as the first one had. Egwene wished she was not sure that the first island was directly over their heads. Nynaeve spoke up suddenly, voicing Egwene's thoughts. Her voice sounded steady, but she paused to swallow in the middle of it.
It might be, Elaine said faintly.
Her eyes rolled upwards and quickly dropped again.
Elida says the rules of nature do not hold in the ways, at least not the way they do outside.
Light, Min muttered, then raised her voice.
How long do you mean us to stay in here?
The Aes Sedai's honey-colored braids swung as she turned to regard them.
Until I take you out, she said flatly. The more you bother me, the longer that will be.
She bent back to studying the parchment and the guiding. Egwene and the others fell silent. Leandrin pushed on from guiding to guiding, by ramps and bridges that seemed to run unsupported through the endless dark. The Aes Sedai paid very little heed to the rest of them, and Egwene found herself wondering whether Leandrin would turn back to search if one of them fell behind. The others perhaps had the same thought, for they all rode bunched tightly on the dark mare's heels. Egwene was surprised to realize that she still felt the attraction of Saidar, both the presence of the female half of the true source and the desire to touch it, to channel its flow. Somehow she had thought the shadow's taint on the ways would hide it from her. She could sense that taint after a fashion. It was faint and had nothing to do with Saidar, but she was sure that reaching for the true source here would be like baring her arm to foul, greasy smoke in order to reach a clean cup. Whatever she did would be tainted. For the first time in weeks, she had no trouble at all in resisting the attraction of Saidar. It was well into what would have been night in the world outside the ways when, on an island, Leandrin abruptly dismounted and announced that they would halt for supper and sleep, and that there was food on the packhorse.
"Parcel it out," she said, not bothering to assign the task. "It will take us the better part of 2 days to reach Tomon Head. I would not have you arrive hungry if you were too foolish not to bring food yourselves." Briskly she unsaddled and hobbled her mare, but then she sat down on her saddle and waited for one of them to bring her something to eat. Elaine took Leandrin her flatbread and cheese. The Aes Sedai made it obvious that she did not want their company, so the rest of them ate their bread and cheese a little apart from her, sitting on their saddles drawn close together. The darkness beyond their lanterns made a poor sauce. After a time, Egwene said, "Leandrin Sedai, what if we encounter the Black Wind?" Min mouthed the word questioningly, but Elaine gave a squeak. "Moiraine Sedai said it could not be killed or even hurt very much, and I can feel the taint on this place waiting to twist anything we do with the power." "You will not so much as think of the source unless I tell you to," Leandrin said sharply. "Why, if one such as you tried to channel here in the ways, you might well go as mad as a man. You have not the training to deal with the taint of those men who made this. If the Black Wind appears, I will deal with it." She pursed her lips, studying a lump of white cheese. "Moiraine does not know so much as she thinks." She popped the cheese into her mouth with a smile. "I do not like her," Egwene muttered, low enough to make sure the Aes Sedai could not hear. "If Moiraine can work with her," Nynaeve said quietly, "so can we. Not that I like Moiraine any better than I do Leandrin, but if they're meddling with Rand and the others again..." She fell silent, hitching her cloak up. The darkness was not cold, but it seemed as if it should be. "What is this Black Wind?" Min asked. When Elaine had explained, with a great deal of what Elida had said and what her mother had said, Min sighed. "The pattern has a great deal to answer for. I don't know that any man is worth this." "You did not have to come," Egwene reminded her. "You could have gone at any time. No one would have tried to stop you leaving the tower." "Oh, I could have wandered off," Min said wryly. "As easily as you or Elaine. The pattern doesn't much care what we want. Egwene, what if, after all you are going through for him, Rand doesn't marry you? What if he marries some woman you've never seen before, or Elaine, or me? What then?" Elaine chortled. "Mother would never approve." Egwene was silent for a time. Rand might not live to marry anyone, and if he did, she could not imagine Rand hurting anyone. Not even after he's gone mad? There had to be some way to stop that, some way to change it. Aes Sedai knew so much, could do so much. If they could stop it, why don't they? The only answer was because they could not, and that was not the one she wanted. She tried to put lightness in her voice. "I don't suppose I will marry him. Aes Sedai seldom do marry, you know. But I would not set my heart on him if I were you, or you, Elaine. I do not think..." Her voice caught, and she coughed to cover it. "I do not think he will ever marry. But if he does, I wish well to whoever ends up with him, even one of you." She thought she sounded as if she meant it. "He is stubborn as a mule and wrong-headed to a fault, but he is gentle." Her voice shook, but she managed to turn the quaver into a laugh. "However much you say you do not care," Elaine said, "I think you'd approve less than Mother would. He is interesting, Egwene. More interesting than any man I've ever met, even if he is a shepherd. If you are silly enough to throw him away, you will have only yourself to blame if I decide to face down you and Mother both. It would not be the first time the Prince of Andor had no title before he wed. But you won't be that silly, so don't try to pretend you will. No doubt you will choose the green Aja and make him one of your warders. The only greens I know with only one warder are married to them." Egwene made herself go along with it, saying if she did become a green, she would have 10 warders. Min watched her, frowning, and Nynaeve watched Min thoughtfully. They all fell silent by the time they changed into more suitable clothes for traveling from their saddlebags. It was not easy keeping spirits up in that place. Sleep came slowly to Egwene, fitfully, and it was filled with bad dreams. She did not dream of Rand, but of the man whose eyes were on fire. His face was not masked this time, and it was horrible with almost healed burns. He only looked at her and laughed, but that was worse than the dreams that followed, the dreams of being lost in the ways forever, the ones where the black wind was chasing her. She was grateful when the toe of Leandrin's riding boot dug into her ribs to waken her. She felt as if she had not slept at all. Leandrin pushed them hard through the next day, or what passed for day, with only their lanterns for a sun, not letting them stop for sleep until they were swaying in their saddles. Stone made a hard bed, but Leandrin roused them ruthlessly after a few hours, hardly waiting for them to mount before riding on. Ramps and bridges, islands and guidings. Egwene saw so many of them in that pitch dark that she lost count. She had long since lost any count of hours or of days. Leandrin allowed only brief halts to eat and rest the horses, and the darkness weighed down on their shoulders. They slumped in their saddles like sacks of grain, except for Leandrin. The Aes Sedai seemed unaffected by tiredness or the dark. She was as fresh as she had been back in the White Tower, and as cold. She would not let anyone glimpse the parchment she compared to the guidings, stuffing it away with a curt, "It is nothing you would understand," when Nynaeve asked. And then, while Egwene blinked wearily, Leandrin was riding away from a guiding, not toward another bridge or ramp, but down a pitted white line that led off into the darkness. Egwene stared at her friends, and then they all hurried to follow. Ahead, by the light of her lantern, the Aes Sedai was already removing the Avendasora leaf from the carvings on a waygate. "We are here," Leandrin said, smiling. "I have brought you at last to where you must go."